Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Ah, yes, I will bring in our splendid guest who is in the KPFA studios, John Rulak, in a moment, but let me weave a little context for him and us. We are at Dark of the Moon. There's a new moon tomorrow morning at 7:53 a.m. West Coast time. The Dark of the Moon is traditionally when people, like ourselves, would gather to dedicate and determine the course of culture. So let's do that. Right now, also, just the mytho-guiding news. You know, Venus has entered the underworld. She has disappeared from the beautiful dance in the western sky. Usually, again, because the Inanna myth is the Venus orbital cycle, usually Venus spends 40 days in the underworld, but she'll be back August 22nd because she can't leave us unsupervised that long. But part of the dynamic of now, you know, is that Venus is gone to gather medicine, that we not be snookered into polarity and thus inadvertently serve the overlords, colonialism, empire dominance, but to align with nature's ever-expanding repertoire of responses. We often say, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. We are dedicated. Jupiter has just entered Virgo, reminding us that all theater and healing are meant to be one thing. No healing without theater, no theater without healing. And so we also enter the time period of festivals and conferences, the art of directing our own and collective intelligence. And let us all assume cultural narrative lead, in a sense. Let us reassume, you know, responsibility for dreaming the desirable world into being. So more than perfectly, So part of the dynamic when we say let us not be snookered into polarity, part of the guiding dynamic of now is how to be boundaried and dive into difficult and hot situations, and be boundaried and protective, but with an open heart of blessing. Again, magnetizing to the unifying story. So I will also be, the purpose of gathering, I will be presenting at the Symbiosis Festival, which is September 17th through the 20th, and that's in Oakdale, California, running the hub stage with my great cohort, Emma Kayla Gaston, who sings the intro for 19 years, Oya Day, to this. That will be with the Yes Men, with Amy Goodman, with Rob Brezhne, and a cast of other people, so that we can really have it be a skill set. But imminently, before that, there is the fantastic Soil Not Oil Conference. So we are welcoming our longtime ally, John Rulak, to magnetize and animate the collaboration of all things carbon, soil, and oceans. His powerful conference that he is producing is in, you know, it's pretty soon, Soil Not Oil. It will be September 4th and 5th in Richmond, California. John Rulak is the founder and CEO of Nutiva. He is an eloquent guide and storyteller to all things important that face us now. Welcome, John.
Great to be here, Caroline. Thank you for having me on the show today.
A great delight, really, always, because you are such a great lucid going, oh, I have John Rulak as part of my inner council going, yes, how to explain it. Because there are such, I just remember somebody I love, a part of my family years ago said, oh, poor Monsanto, they're really the victim of a highly financed publicity campaign. I'm like, no, just get out of here. Anyway, so now back to you. So guide us in to Soil Not Oil, and then everywhere we want to go about this. And I brought also a wonderful ally, Kristen Olson's book, The Soil Will Save Us. I was just rereading the end of that book, too, about how to get opposing forces unified. But feel free to dive us in. I know you're going to have Vandana Shiva and many other extraordinary people at this conference. Yeah?
Yeah, it's an exciting conference. We'll have over 100 speakers, Frishov Kopra, here lives here in Berkeley, Miguel Altieri, who's professor at UC Berkeley, Ignacio Chapella, John Wick from the Marin Carbon Project, who's been working on how we can take compost and apply a half inch of compost on rangelands and other tree crops and sequester up to one ton of carbon per hectare per year. And the University of California scientists initially thought, could that be really possible? They didn't believe that we could actually pull carbon from the atmosphere and lock it into the soil through fungi and bacteria. And lo and behold, their research showed that they can. So we're bringing together lots of people. We're bringing up one of the preeminent soil scientists from Ohio, Ohio State University, Dr. Ratan Lal, and as you mentioned, Vandana Shiva from India. So it's going to be good. We're bringing some youth. There's a 15-year-old gentleman who's coming from Colorado, who's one of the a young group of teenagers who recently sued, I think, the federal government over climate change and the concern that that's going to impact our lives and the ecosystem. So we're looking forward to this conference.
That's wonderful. And I know also for all of our dedicated listeners, you produced the short film, which is thesoilstory.com, where people can see that, yeah?
Yes, it's a group called Kiss the Ground, which Paul Hawken and myself are advisors, and the same people who produce the story of stuff, producing the story of soil, and it's on YouTube, so you can just Google that. And Jason Mraz does the intro and the soundtrack, and it's an animated, basically explain what we'll be talking today in a simple animation form in less than 5 minutes. Very powerful, and we're excited to get that out. And the basic concept is for the narrative for the last 30, 40, 50 years is we're putting too much carbon in the atmosphere from burning oil, burning fuel, digging up things, putting the atmosphere. And so to solve that, we need to go to, solar, to wind, to green energy, which are all good things, and dig up less oil. The challenge with that is kind of like that's the issue and carbon's the problem. That's what I say is 50% of the problem. We need to decarbonize, reduce our carbon footprint for our energy and transportation. But what we've forgotten about is how do we take the carbon that's in the atmosphere, instead of looking at it as like, oh, there's 400 parts per million, that's bad. Now it's going to go to 450, carbon, bad molecule. Instead, it's all a matter of balance. And that carbon put into our soils actually create abundance, water conservation, more nutritious food, less need for fertilizers. And so we can transform what we think is a problem into a solution. And the great thing is we can work with ranchers who are becoming grass farmers instead of just doing CAFO, industrial confinement animal operations. So there's more of that going on. And when organic regenerative farmers, instead of relying on chemical fertilizers, which 98% of all the crops, 99% in America, they just call up the chemical company and inject fertilizer made from natural gas into the soil, which releases huge amounts of nitric oxide, which people don't know, it's over 380 times more powerful than CO2. But of course, you wouldn't read that in Time Magazine or CNN or New York Times. And so there's this...
Let's just say yet.
Yet, yeah. Let's say yet. You haven't read that yet. Let's say there you go. There you go.
We haven't read that yet in time.
Yeah. That's right. It's interesting. They hadn't been talking about ocean acidification, and the New York Times mentioned the word ocean acidification for the first time that I'd seen it in a while. And Bernie Sanders recently mentioned ocean acidification. But the idea is back to this, to the chemical fertilizers. You can instead fix nitrogen and grow your own fertilizer through cover crops such as alfalfa and peas and vetch. And that's what organic farmers can do. And so this way we can convert some of those materials into the soil and have a more balanced soil fertility. So there's lots of good solutions here, but the we're getting close to the kind of that tipping point of climate chaos where there'll be so much carbon in the atmosphere that will increase the level of storms, increase the level of melting of glaciers. And this is what folks like Bill McKibben have been talking about, and scientists from NASA and various climate agencies. So we really are at that pivot point of, do we make that choice to return to the soil or our connection to the soil and change how we grow food and fiber.
And with the likes of yourself, you know, how do we keep our hearts plucky? I was out on the road and talking to many allies and old friends and whatever, and they're like, oh, the ocean acidification, there's nothing to be done. You know, we've killed the ocean. And I go, wait, listen to this show and other things too. It is neck and neck. It is neck and neck. But do you think also that the sequestration appropriately in soil, how much pressure can we take off the ocean? Do you have a jaunty heart as well as a realistic, you know, both those things together?
Well, the challenge is that the carbon, which we're putting too much into the atmosphere now, it falls into the ocean. You can think of it's like three simple carbon sinks. There's the atmosphere. There's the ocean and what I call the humosphere, that thin layer of soil where trees and crops grow, and that two out of the three are maxed out. So the only place that we can put that carbon is back into the soil. So if we can start to pull the excess carbon from the atmosphere, it won't be falling into the oceans. And the oceans, the more carbon falls, it becomes more acidic, and as then the more carbon in the atmosphere, the oceans start to heat up because the planet's starting to heat up. So we have that potential to pull that, and if we really focus on it as a society, we could do it within 10 years.
Meaning, 10 years
we could take the CO2 level, which is at 400 parts per million, on the way to 450, we could take it to 350 parts per million. Now, the question is, you know, how much we're going to be focused but if we could take it to, if we can stop it from going from 400 to 430, let's say where it might be in a decade or two or three, if we can take it even down to 380, that's a big plus. And so there's, you know, we could potentially, just with the compost, just composting what's available, there's a huge amount of material. So there's a lot of potential with it. The good news is, a year ago, very few people knew about this, and today more people are discussing this. And even the French Minister of Agriculture traveled to the United States recently. And of course, France is hosting the climate talks in November in for the world. And the French Minister of Agriculture now is a believer in soil sequestration, carbon farming, regenerative agriculture, and is going to help put that onto the agenda. So that's very exciting.
So, in the conference, SoilNet Oil International Conference, September 4th and 5th in Richmond, California, many lucky enough to attend. And then also, are you going to be recording and sending these things out?
We're working on potentially seeing if we can record it and stream it live on the Soil Not Oil Coalition website, so people can just Google Soil Not Oil Coalition, and you can see the webpage. You can sign up for the conference. If you're not able to make the conference, we're looking to you know, we're just working out those details, but that's one of our plans, so people can make that available. And also, the other thing to mention is the United Nations has declared 2015 to be the International Year of the Soils. And the other thing I wanted to mention, Miguel from Biosafety Alliance is the one that's kind of been spearheading this conference and working very hard. And he's done these conferences, last few, in Portland and Seattle on GMOs. And so he's been working very hard on this. And there's a whole group of people who are involved in this. The California State Grange, the Center for Biological Diversity, Kiss the Ground, Communities for a Better Environment, Center for Food Safety, Fibershed, Organic Consumers Association, RSF Social Finance, Sunflower Alliance, so Factory Farming Awareness Coalition. So this is truly a real grassroots community-based event.
Yeah, and what since we have the power, the magical power of radio convening right now, what do you feel is the dedicated purpose and most desirable outcome of this gathering? you know, do you, is it, you know, there is an educational dynamic, again, did you know, and also an invitation of alliances kind of across borders. Again, that's the end of The Soil Will Save Us by Kristen Olson, where she talks about, you know, ranchers and environmentalists at war, but now beginning to find, to come into accord. So what is the dedicated vision that you would like us all to help you animate?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think one is to help the Bay Area kind of foodie community, those who are interested in food, to come together and learn about this. So it's a way to educate people who are living in the Bay Area who might be interested. And then secondly, it's also an opportunity for people who are coming across the world that may know of each other, may have read, or may see each other every once in a while, to be able to connect and share ideas. And there's an organization called Regenerative International that recently has formed. So several of those people, including Vandana Shiva and Ronnie Cummins from the Organic Consumers Association. So it's a way kind of cross-fertilize and create some synergies. And then also at the same time, it's creating an opportunity to discuss it more. So like just, we're having this conference, so you're having me on here. Maybe someone will hear about this. Someone heard me talk last month at a conference in Silicon Valley, and they're interested in developing an investment fund to promote more pasture-based agricultural systems. So it's kind of sharing information and sowing seeds and seeing what can sprout into the future.
Excellent. You know, and it is also, you know, the power of stories. I want to do a shout out. I was away last week. We had a great replay of John Michael Greer, but the previous two shows before that were wonderful allies, Chairman Val and Matthew Fox and Norma Flores and Elias Castillo, all about, you know, using the giant kerfuffle of the Pope about to canonize Junipero Serra, using it as this opportunity for education. And what I beam to their dedicated hearts also is, yes, you are doing so well at using this kind of as an opportunity to tell the story so that everyone is more informed about the California mission system and the essence of colonialism, which ties us to everything. And again, that's really, in a sense, what you're addressing, this idea of, you know, we're coming to the end of dominating and coming to the end of to the beginning and the return of collaborating. So I love, you know, you've accomplished so much. I mean, I love seeing Nutiva everywhere. In the challenging market of Whole Foods, I have so many friends, the likes of yourself, who have really ethical products out there, like Mary's Gone Crackers, again, friend of show. And I often, at Whole Foods, like in a bookstore, I shuffle your products to the front, going, no, they're getting covered up there. Let's put them up. So this idea, here you are, a very knowledgeable, always learning and accomplished business person. Wonderful. So I just want to kind of toss to you this power that we all have right now, which is we do something like what you're doing and what you've done with your business and what you're doing with your conference. That is a real thing that becomes a story that inspires people to do real things, that becomes a story that inspires people. And it seems that that's part of the diaspora, the seeds of now, that this conference that you're doing, and also your dedicated heart for so many years, educating. I mean, you've been educating people, John Rulak, for, I don't know, since you took your first breath, probably. But you have been out and about in an incredibly useful way, going, did you know? And here's the thing about GMOs. And we might want to go just backwards a little bit into the vat of poison that we're all addressing from past shows, when you said, what was it? Oh, dear. Solentra is buying up, you know, is creating synthetic chocolate. I know this isn't, this is slightly too askew, but remind us just of the, because we got to know the horrible stuff and then as a strengthening of our heart's dedication, remind us of that danger right now.
Yeah. Well, we are entering an age where the use of computing power and the ability to mimic biology, which these new printers of life entrepreneurs call nature identical, and so they're basically taking you know, different enzymes and creating vats where you feed and yeast, and you feed it, you know, like GMO corn syrup or sugar, and then they put in self-replicating DNA sequencers, and so you can print cinnamon, you can print stevia, you can print lauric acid, and no one has come out on the market into the food sector yet, but they're working on it. Someone recently, they're going to print egg whites, so that's a company right here in the Bay Area, and Berkeley is the mother of the creation of this, the creation story here, because UC Berkeley has a lot of spin-offs and things. And so, of course, the concept that maybe we should take some of these foods and put it through a feeding trial for 2 years. And of course, they didn't do that, and they're not looking to do that. And if you read Stephen Drucker's book on altered genes, He shows that back in the 1980s and early 90s, when they were just introducing the GMO crops, the scientists all said there could be allergen issues. There could be some unintended consequences. What about gene fragments that could be left? This is a novel food. I mean, you're actually putting a pesticide in every cell. Shouldn't we do some studies? And they recommended that, and it was overruled, so they never did any long-term studies. And if you ask Monsanto, are GMO foods safe? They'll say the FDA has said that they're safe, and so obviously wouldn't be selling if the FDA hasn't approved it. But if you ask the FDA, mm-hmm. and they say we don't judge any safety for any GMO foods, that's done by the firm that produces them, and then they put in their own study that they self-submission, and then of course that's approved for political expediency. So we're in a whole new era, and there's a real kind of battle right now between those who want to create all sorts of new life forms without any sort of precautionary principle. And we're not just talking about, growing a different variety of, you know, carrot. We're talking about creating new life forms and snipping DNA. And so they're losing, the GMO industry is losing market share. Monsanto has like $100 million, what I call charm offensive, where they have, entire departments and PR firms and there's all sorts of different blog sites out there that make up different things, and they're paying scientists to go all around and like go to Hawaii and say, oh, of course Roundup is safe, you can drink it, and of course we don't need setbacks for the people who live, you know, 100 feet away from these highly toxic zones. That Hawaii basically is ground zero for the GMO battle. They grow all sorts of cutting edge GMO crops that are just, you know, in the laboratory, so to speak, coming out of the laboratory. They use untested chemicals and different varieties, and so it's a sad scene. So the good news is people are resisting. The demand for GMO crops are falling. Every major food company in America, sales are at best pretty much flat or minus, such as Kraft Foods, General Mills, Kellogg's, so there's a growing demand for this. And basically, people vote three times a day with your dollar. So if you want to see a more healthy future where organic regenerative agriculture puts carbon from the atmosphere and it can sequester into the soil, or at least use less carbon, you know, not all organic farming is regenerative, but it's definitely better than industrial agriculture where they're using chemical fertilizers and spraying a lot of chemicals. So it's a challenge, kind of a bleak picture when you think that we've allowed wartime chemical companies such as Monsanto and Syngenta that have spent over 50 to 100 years as a company, you know, creating toxic Superfund sites and, you know, spraying Agent Orange over vast quantities over Vietnam, over the Vietnam people and our soldiers and all the health issues, that we're going to turn over the supply of our food and trust that they're going to be in charge of quality and taking care of our the food that we feed our kids and our family and friends. I mean, that's just a complete lack of ethical focus in my view. But sometimes, as we all know, when we become asleep, we become anesthetized with what is going on in our world. We sometimes accept we accept these things because we don't want to contest it. We don't want to, you know, it was interesting. I was talking to an activist recently and shared them some information. I gave it in a loving way. I said, hey, here's what you're doing right and here's what I need you to do. And they said, how rude are you? So people have such a hard time sharing hard truths, even if you do it in a respectful way. And so,
what did they mean about your rudeness?
I was informing them that they could be sharing more information about some of the ways some of the NGOs, you know, we cooperate and stuff. So it's just, you know, it's just partly doing taking care of things and everyone's busy and stuff. So it's I think that's one of the things that I try to continue to improve on is how can I share information with people that maybe upsets them, it's new or they don't want to believe it, and do it in a way that's maybe a bit entertaining and not so threatening
I think that's really crucial that we all be effective, dedicated to being effective storytellers. Going, here's the offering, and also let's just put on our work table that criticism. I like putting the hyphen in diagnosis, which is dia-hyphen-gnosis. So all diagnosis is good because dia means everywhere and gnosis is wisdom. And, many of our team until now have been kind of criticism averse. So we want a kind of spicy, yet we got to go down to how difficult it is and what we can do. And then, craft our storytelling so that it is an irresistible offering. I find you pretty great, but we're all working on it. But can we go back over just so that we're all informed and spiraling forth with what you have to proffer. So Syngenta and Monsanto, you said, creating Superfund sites and war companies. Remind us of that. What is that history?
During the Vietnam War, Monsanto was one of the suppliers and made Agent Orange, which was sprayed over vast jungles over Vietnam.
So not just Dow Chemical.
Monsanto. Basically the pesticide companies, what people need to understand, the basis for pesticide companies were chemical bomb factories. So the companies that made the bombs during World War I and World War II are the modern day pesticide companies. So these are companies based on war. They're like they're dedicated to the gods of war and destruction and poison and toxins. And so we've said, you should run the food system, and you should be the one that's funding the major largest funders to UC Davis and Iowa State, and you should select, you should tell President Obama who should be the Secretary of Agriculture. Oh yeah, of course we want the biotechnology Governor of the Year to be the Secretary of Agriculure, and of course we want our international economic team to push GMOs across the country, across the world. And of course we should say that any countries that don't take our GMOs, we should punish them economically. This is how Monsanto plays. But again, how is their business model work? Their business model works is they produce seeds and chemicals and they sell it to people. And guess what? People buy those foods. And not everyone can afford always to buy organic, and I understand that, but there's a lot of people who have some extra dollars and they consciously are not buying organic. They're not going to the farmer's market, and we can do that. And just like there's solar panels all over California and solar's taking off. Why is that? Because people 10 years ago said, you know what, I'm going to put solar panels on my rooftop, even though it's a little more expensive, but I believe in it. And those were Republicans, those were Democrats, those were all sorts of types of people, and said, I'm going to do that. And we need more of that today. And we've, 5% of all food sales in America is certified organic. We need that to be 10 or 20%, at least. And one of the challenges, though, and here's a kind of shows you that one of the things we're facing is 5% of the sales of food in America is certified organic. Guess what the percentage, I want the listeners to think about, what is the percentage of acres in America that is actually certified organic, that's producing certified organic crops? It's less than 1%. Yes. It's 0.7%. So much of the organic acres that we're sourcing is coming from internationally. Organic is growing in South America. Organic is growing in Asia, and that's good, but it's not growing so fast in America because of the stranglehold of the industrial agricultural system. And so...
Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you in a sentence. We're going to take a very, very short, like the 30-second musical break and come right back in with our splendid guest and educator and guide and conference organizer, John Rulak, Soil Not Oil. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled him across his eyes. She showered his head with quasar and made his torches cry.
Hold him down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Ooh, shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our great guest today is John Rulak. He is founder and CEO of Nutiva, and great educator, longtime ally of the show and all living beings. And he is one of the producers of this upcoming conference, Soil Not Oil, which will be September 4th and 5th in Richmond, California. And he's working on streaming it to those who are not in that location. Let's see that happening, because that would be really great. Just to jump back in, I know you were in the middle of a sentence. Wherever you want to go with that is fine. And I just want to come back to you were addressing Monsanto as a war pesticides weapon startup. What is Syngenta's evolution of war into taking over this toxic mimic of actual food?
I don't have all the history of Syngenta. They're a Swiss-based company, and I always like to say the Germans are the master chemists of the world. You know, they made the best LSD and the best chemicals for wartime as well. So what they're most famous for right now is making a class of a special class of pesticides, nicotinoids, and they have the unfortunate ability to destroy bee habitat and hurt the immune systems. They've been banned in Europe, and virtually every GMO seed that is planted in America today and in Canada around the world is dipped in this toxic pesticide, and so it expresses itself in the plant as it grows. And so one of the hypotheses is when the plant grows, that when the bees go on the dew on the plant, that they can absorb some of that. And also in Ontario, the Ontario Beekeepers Association, which is a up in Canada, a really good group of collaborating beekeepers, and they're very upset because sometimes the dust from those pesticides now is getting into the air when the farmers plant it, and so they've seen huge diebacks, and these companies are so diabolical. They are now having people who, even like at the Hoover Institute from Stanford and other kind of paid guns, to state that the bee colonies are actually increasing. There's not a decrease, and they have this whole twisted logic, and so trying to get this. So Syngenta is a major chemical company. They also have a GMO division, and in Wall Street they're battling out. Monsanto, realizing that their Roundup is becoming less and less effective, their leading herbicide use, which is they have Roundup Ready soy, Roundup Ready corn, Roundup Ready cotton. For those people don't understand that, that means you grow the crop and you can spray the Roundup and it doesn't kill the corn. It kills the other weeds. Unfortunately, now these other weeds are becoming super weeds and they resist that Roundup. And So Monsanto is having more and more issues around this. So they are looking to purchase Syngenta. And because the regulators, they would force them to sell off all the seed. So there's not even a more of a monopoly in the seed business. So Monsanto then is just going to return to even more of a chemical company. And so obviously if Monsanto says they're interested in sustainability, why would they want to buy a chemical company that has these chemicals that are hurting bees? And bees are pollinating all of our crops. We wouldn't have blueberries, strawberries, so many things. Matter of fact, Whole Foods recently did a program where the employees took out all the products that wouldn't be on the shelf. There weren't for bees. That's an example of theater, right? That was some store person.
Right.
And that's an example. It's like, what can we do in our own life to like do something? Imagine if you, maybe you worked at a restaurant. You wanted to do a prank and maybe they wouldn't like that one night. You know, you say, hey, take out all the foods we wouldn't have if there wasn't bees here. You know, bring all your bee friendly people in. But we just need to figure out a way to communicate with people. We're so, you know, busy in our world and stuff. And I think the other challenge that I see is people today were too disconnected from nature. We spend more time in front of a screen and a car, indoors, and less time in nature. And so the natural world is like something other. It's not part of us. It's outside of us. Our ancestors all were deeply connected with nature. We have to look to understand, you know, what would be the crops coming next year, and where would the, if you saw clouds in the sky, you might have to understand if you were traveling long distance, is it going to rain? What, you know, you need to be listening. You need to be observant. And so when we've lost that skill, we somehow just assume that the natural world will be okay. And part of my message today is, and that I've interested in, and I've discovered is that the ocean may be that camel, that straw that could break the camel's back. It's like we're using so many resources, and what is going to be that kind of tipping point, in a potentially, you know, negative cascading effect, and ocean acidification. I encourage everyone to Google ocean acidification, look at this. And it's the process where the oceans become more acidic. Interestingly, Eric Schmidt's wife, Wendy Schmidt from Google, she's a big fan of the oceans, and she's just done an XPRIZE with $2 million to award to the top firms that can monitor ocean acidification. Now they're going to put it up in a cloud-based application, and people can now monitor ocean acidification, which is very exciting. We'll now have the data. For example, the state of Washington and the state of Maine, both places that grow a lot of, you know, crab and lobster, they have commissions now assessing this. This, what's going to happen is because as the oceans become more acidic, their concern is they may not be able, the lobsters may not be able to have enough calcium, be able to produce the calcium to form the shells. Already millions of oysters are dying. Starfish are dying.
Starfish.
Tens of thousands of sea lions are washing up, barely alive or dead, young sea lions, because the ocean, that may not be completely around ocean acidification, but somehow the food has changed, the food cycle, in the oceans. So something's really wrong. And there's also long stretches of algae bloom, and you know, our friends in Alaska, the indigenous people there, are being told they can't eat the seashells, some of the seafood there because of red tide, much stronger than before. So it's something that we have to come into balance. But you know, the good news is, I like to say, is we have an app for that, and that app is regenerative agriculture. we can pull that carbon. The question is, can we get out of our reptilian mind? You know, are we going to just be the frog in the water that just slowly gets a little hotter until we burn ourselves up?
No, I'm in accord, but the frog in the water. Right. Well, the frog in the water never really happened. I think it's an unfortunate metaphor because that's not true.
Well, let's jump out of it. Let's collectively jump out of it and start doing things.
Right. Absolutely. No. Exactly. And I think that this is a huge, you know, I mean, as I am sort of, you know, dedicated keeper of the mythic news, you know, bees are sacred to Venus. The idea of intimacy and pollination, and this information that you're spiraling forth and that we're dedicated to doing as well, huge opportunity. I think the time is really right for what you're doing and for the Soil Not Oil conference in many ways. ways. And then I was watching Bill Maher, who's, you know, up and down, but there's some good things. We speak to the good in all people. And he was talking to Mary Madeline, or, you know, very Republican, right-wing kind of person.
Right.
But they were very dedicated. They said, you know, do you realize, you know, what brought them together, that 47% of all animals in the ocean and the earth have been killed in the last 40 years. It's like 47%. And this is something that really unites. I mean, deep conservatives, you go, okay, never mind that part. But that idea of the unifying story. And I think this, you know, when you started off by saying, you know, Time Magazine, New York Times aren't covering this, and we go, yet. We know that when they finally roll around to do that, it's not controversial anymore, because whatever's on Time is not controversial anymore. But it is in the memosphere. I mean, there's a great hunger and I think across a, you know, dissolving divisive lines to magnetize, you know, sane, reverent storytelling with, you know, conservatives and with, you know, whatever. It really does want to happen now. And I suppose also in Soil, Soil Not Oil, and people can find out more about that conference by just Googling Soil Not Oil, or
yes,
how would you guide people?
Yeah, just Google Soil Not Oil Coalition.
Coalition,
yeah,
okay.
Yes. And
And I think that, you know, that part of the dynamic, just to offer encouragement from this other domain here, is that, you know, Jupiter's power of storytelling right now, it's in Virgo, which is let's do real stuff and then have those stories inspire people. And right when you're convening your conference, Jupiter is opposite Neptune, people very hungry to speak about the relationship of the Earth and the ocean. It's scheduled, and you're in accord with it, John Rulak. So, yeah, the Earth and the sea in a healing harmony. And, you know, again, you know, Kristen Olson's The Soil Will Save Us. So it is neck and neck. But what is your sense, or what could we offer to humans now? I know you said that, you know, we could, if we start doing this, we could, you know, get back to 350 parts per million. What would that look like for the ocean? Does it, you know, we take the pressure off and it begins to have this resilient comeback so that
the ocean is starfish again? The ocean is very complex. and I'm not an ocean, you know, ocean science expert. But what we do know is the more carbon we put in the atmosphere, it falls in the ocean, and the algae is beginning to die. It's not all dead. There's obviously life in ocean, and the algae is what provides 2 out of 3 of our breaths of oxygen we take today. So it's very important. So I say, attention, all breathers, all oxygen breathers. You might want to pay attention to the natural cycle around carbon and how it impacts the oceans. And it literally, the solution is under our feet. And so by sequestering the carbon, putting the soil, then tomorrow that carbon won't go up in the atmosphere and fall in the ocean. It will stay in the soil, and it's going to be harder to be able to pull the carbon from the ocean out. We may not, you know, that's another subject. Other people are working on that, but at least let's not do more damage. So we can do that, and so it's something that needs to be done. And, you know, solar and wind is accelerating. And I was just talking to someone I know that, you know, we need all these, every time you send a tweet or a Facebook message, you need a server farm for that, you know, with the information up in the cloud. They figured out a way to put servers on bodies of water, like on rivers or in bays, and use the water to cool it, and they can use 40% less energy for all these giant server farms for Apple and Google. So these are the kind of innovations that people are working on. So we need to not only decarbonize our energy, we need to recarbonize our soil, and that's really the message. And for too long, we've been focusing 99% of our energy on decarbonizing energy and power and transportation, and we need to focus that on soils. And in fact, I recently wrote an article that where I talk a little about that, but it's called Starbucks, Destroyer of the Seas, and Starbucks is one of my favorite companies to kind of engage in. And for those of you who might not know, I'm the co-founder and co-chair of GMO Inside, and it's a social media project. We have over 210,000 Facebook fans, and we put out a lot of viral information on GMOs and also on soil. So you can follow us at GMO Inside. And so we just launched this, and we have 2,500 views on this. And essentially, every time you buy a Starbucks latte, you are voting to destroy the oceans, because industrial milk and industrial meat. And you know, that may sound over the top, but we need to take responsibility for our actions.
I want to be able to say that. Yeah, every time you drink a Starbucks latte, you're because we just need a little bit of connective there, so that we inform.
Yeah, let me share that.
Let's go on that.
Yeah. So, what is the largest contributor in agriculture? It's by far the confined animal feedlot operations, or CAFOs for short. So, what do CAFOs do? They source almost all genetically modified corn or soybeans that are grown with chemical fertilizers. And even if they were doing non-GMO corn and soy, they're still using chemical fertilizers, still using herbicides, still using pesticides. So just being non-GMO is not the end-all be-all. And so they grow those grains. It takes a lot of chemicals, a lot of energy for the fertilizer and to produce the corn. And then they ship it to feedlots. They feed it to the cows, and then the cows get sick. They have a short life because the cows are not designed to eat corn and soybean. It elevates their omega-6 levels, so it's not healthy for us. And it creates all sorts of waste lagoons. They got manure management issues, as they say in the hood, so you smell this huge waste, and it's toxic, and then some of it the dams break and causes problems for people who live in those rural areas. And then that manure escapes up into the atmosphere. So if we can rely instead on dairy where the cows have access to grass, and the farmer the rancher is taking care of the soil, and we're actually converting the CO2 via the grass into roots. So we can become grass farmers, and more people are learning to do that. You can Google a little movie called Carbon Cowboys, and it shows that. And so that's the challenge, and Starbucks is one of the largest sellers of milk. They sell more milk than they do, coffee beans. So they use a lot more milk in those lattes than a coffee bean. So Starbucks, being the social responsible, image from the mermaid, they're based in Seattle. Right. They're literally, their corporate headquarters is helping to mastermind, tens of thousands of stores on a global basis, supporting a system that is killing the oceans, and the whales are literally swimming, and the salmon up the stream and in the Puget Sound, literally within a few 10 to 20 miles from their corporate headquarters. And partly I choose this also as a young boy. When I was 2 or 3 years old, I used to spend months at a time on an island with no electricity and no running water, and I watched the whales and I saw the fish, and the ocean was a much different world in the 1960s and than it is today, and it saddens me to see just the wanton destruction that we're going on, and it's not I'm part of that. I live in this industrial world. We live in this modern world, and I have an iPhone. None of us are perfect, and we have to come together and work on some solutions, and so what better than one of the most high profile iconic brands in the world, Starbucks, that calls themselves socially responsible and progressive. Imagine what they could do if they could step up and participate in this. But we put 10,000 comments on their Facebook wall, and they came out with some coconut milk. So, we're making some progress.
No, it's good. It's again critique and invitation. Going, come on over here. That's right. I like the image of the whales and salmon. You know, swimming to the Starbucks headquarters. Going, hey. It is part of the witty dynamic that I think over twice now, Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant and also a nuclear power plant in Scotland were shut down by jellyfish. And I go, that's very witty because the global heating cataclysm that is giving rise to jellyfish are doing really well, going, we're going to go shut down the thing that is giving rise to us. And we go, yes, and now poison ivy surround them too. There we go. So there is a symmetry. And again, that critique and then invitation, maybe possibly next year if you keep your Soil Not Oil conference going. Do you know the work of Joel Salatin, who's kind of in my neighborhood?
Yes. He's been a pioneer in all this.
He'd be a great human to involve in this conversation, because again, you know, there is a part for humane collaboration with animals that Joel's really great at, you know, in regenerating soil and in moving the chickens around and everybody having a happy life and then, you know, happy dead. It is one direction to go, and that's also part of the expanding repertoire of influence so that we go, not that, but over here, and many ways to go over here. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
And one thing I wanted to mention, Caroline, there's a great book for people who want to have a deeper dive into GMOs and the potential health concerns and the issues around the FDA that we spoke. And it's Stephen Drucker's book, and it's called Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. And that's a very powerful book. So I encourage people to look at it. It's Stephen Drucker, Drucker.
Yes, and you know, we would say, well, of course. But in our ever-expanding, you know, influence, may it be that everyone listening, dedicated agents of sane reverence, a renaissance rising from rubble. So is Stephen Drucker, does he have credentials? Not that I care, but,
he's
you know, a, handing
he's an,
to...
He's an attorney, and interestingly, Jane Goodall says it's one of the most important books of this last century, of the last 50 years.
Oh,
so Jane Goodall is a huge proponent of this. And Jane Goodall, I don't know anyone, you know, in the world that you could say has more of a commitment to the natural order and protecting wildlife and dedicating her life. She's a fantastic human being, you know, did a lot of work in Africa with gorillas.
She is.
And she really is a big advocate, and I think she does the foreword on this book. So I really encourage the book's a little heavy, a little dense, but if you skip around, you can really get a sense of how they were essentially, it shows how the molecular biologists were able to kind of take over the kind of running of managing of this introduction, and they didn't pay attention to the ecologists and the systems thinkers and said, no, we don't need to worry about those things. We have this industry moving forward. So it's quite interesting.
Well, part of our rogue team we want to embrace back into sanity is that, you know, Monsanto and GMOs certainly have, you know, bamboozled Bill Gates and the Bill Gates Foundation and many molecular biologists, and just that model of, you know, even, you know, medium hip grown-ups going nuclear power. There is still a little sneaky bit of colonialism going, we are guys, we know best, you know, if you don't use GMOs, you want to kill Africa. They really do. Some of them, maybe not, but many of those people really do think that. So, yeah, and Jane Goodall, I'm so glad you bring her up, because she is such a great model of effective spiraling communication. I don't know if you ever saw her on Stephen Colbert in the medium towards the end of his. Well, she was great because she said, let's greet each other as apes. And so they did, you know, and he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And she goes, no, you wouldn't do that, you know, because you like me. And then they did a kind of ape greeting. She's irresistible. And again, just as somebody who informs without finger wagging, I think she is one of the most admirable, embodied, doing great things, wonderful people on the planet. So, yes. We will read that book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, with Jane Goodall's foreword, so that we can be ever... Yeah, I think part of what, you know, your education and implementation and the upcoming conference, and may it be then available in whatever form you dream up, the content, is the more we know, the more everybody knows, the more effective we are in world, because no one really responds badly to "Did you know?" Unless we ask it with a snarky, finger-wagging tone. But "did you know?" People go, "Oh, I didn't know that," or "Oh, okay." So the more we know, you know, the better. And again, I think you're such a great part of the team in that way, John Rulak, because you do provide us, you know, "Did you know that Syngenta is making, you know, printing cinnamon and egg whites?" But last time you were on the show, you said that they were actually also printing chocolate, and that we might not have, and vanilla beans. Vanilla beans,
vanilla.
That's what it was.
Yeah, they're printing vanilla, the flavor of it. And they want to label it as natural, so you wouldn't even know it's labeled. So
no.
Friends of the Earth, right. If you want to learn more about that, just Google Friends of the Earth and synthetic biology. But the Bay Area is this is the headquarters of that whole movement, so it's going to be interesting to see where that goes.
You mean Syngenta based in Berkeley?
No, Syngenta is the chemical company in Switzerland, but the synthetic biology,
Switzerland,
yeah. So this is the synthetic biology are independent, smaller companies. Solazyme is the provider of some of the material to make these things. There's a whole ecosystem of supporting this. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all develops. But you know, going back, as we need to focus on some of the positive things and look at how we can use regenerative agriculture to restore our ecosystems and conserve water and mitigate and if not reverse climate change. And now is the time to do that.
Absolutely, and I think also the gatherings with you know to feed our hearts and also information is really crucial now. And then just for the fun of it, just a blessing to bestow upon your great work. You know, part of the beautiful dynamic of now and when your conference is taking place, and even also when we're gathering at Symbiosis later in September. But years ago, late great ally Jim Lewis said, "Look at Jupiter and Pluto, incredible for effective publicity." And I was like, "Huh, oh, why? Look at that. Jupiter's storytelling, Pluto is death and rebirth. Its primary image is the phoenix." And to make sense of that, I had to say, okay, the story of the phoenix. "Before the phoenix bursts into flames, it sings this most, and is reborn. It sings this most beautiful and haunting song, and all of creation stops and is reminded of what's really important, beauty and art and kindness and reciprocal blessing and mutual aid." And everybody listens to that. And then the phoenix bursts into flames. So we'd say, well, the phoenix got a lot of publicity. And so we spiral that back to you, John Rulak, and your dedication and your conference. And it says, you have the phoenix's song behind you, to do this dedicated act and then to have it spiral ever more out there into the world in greater influence. So are you up for that?
Yeah, that sounds great. We're working on doing that. Nikkei Business Times just interviewing me about GMOs that's going to go into Japan, and I said Monsanto is like the Fukushima of agriculture. Was my metaphor. And one of the things I wanted to mention is the Heirloom Expo is in Santa Rosa at the fairgrounds, September, I think it's 9th, 10th, and 11th, the Heirloom Expo. I'll be speaking there, and so will a lot of other people from around the country. And that's a great event for all about organic farming and gardening and information, good food. So that's another event coming up as well. And then Bioneers in middle of October, bioneers.org. I'll be speaking there with John Wick from the Marin Carbon Project, and look forward to seeing you there. And then also the Green Festival later in November. So lots of different events coming up.
That's wonderful. I'll be there at Bioneers on Friday night. Also, you can buy tickets for that separately as well. All right, so we will be interweaving. Thank you so much, John Rulak. Again, everybody Google Soil Not Oil Conference September 4th and 5th in Richmond, California. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you. Kiss the ground. Kiss the ground, the soil,
yes.
The story of soil.
Yes.
It's a great video to share. Really share that, yeah.
We will do that. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the earth. Thanks always to Alex Drewinskis in Washington, D.C., Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, Coyote Network. And we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof.
Understanding ISIS and the new global war on terror is emphatically something we must do. It is also the title of a new book by Phyllis Bennis, reliably judicious commentator, fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies, writer for the Middle East Report. Phyllis Bennis will discuss ISIS and this eerie war on terror on Tuesday, September 29th, 7:30 p.m. at the Hillside Club, 2286 Cedar Street in Berkeley. This KPFA benefit offers wheelchair access. The excellent Mitch Jezerich will host. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com and at our blessed independent bookstores. More information on kpfa.org. For September 29th, Phyllis Bennis.
Here's another community-powered announcement from KPFA.
On Saturday, August 15th, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., the Berkeley Protest Festival takes place at 1924 Cedar Street in Berkeley. This festival was inspired by a suggestion from folk singer Country Joe McDonald. This benefit for the Berkeley Fellowship of Unitarian Universalists celebrates the protest zone.